You're listening to Defending Faith, Family, and Freedom, featuring Gary Bauer, Senior Vice President of Public Policy at the Dr. James Dobson Family Institute. And now, here's Gary.
Hello, this is Gary Bauer, Vice President of Public Policy at the James Dobson Family Institute. Welcome to our weekly podcast, Defending Faith, Family, and Freedom. We're glad you're here today, and we hope you'll come back each week as we try to empower you to have a real influence on our country. You know, you probably have noticed, just as I have, that for years and years, there's been this theme that's been repeated over and over again by all kinds of people, that Americans need to be more involved in government and in being good citizen. You've seen the articles that come out almost every election cycle where somebody will compare the percentage of people that vote in America with how many people voted in some country in Europe. Or you'll see TV shows where they'll stop people on the street and ask them to name their two senators, and they can't do it. And then we all laugh that they don't even follow things closely enough, that they don't even know that. We see states for years now doing things to make it easier for somebody to be an involved citizen. They've made it easier for people to vote. There's big controversy about that, whether they've made it too easy or not. And as you know, Election Day has become in some places Election Week and even Election Month. Look, I'm not sure that's a great idea, but what it all points to is that everybody has agreed that America would be better off if everybody was involved in the political process and being good citizens and using the liberties that we have as the result of tremendous sacrifices that were made by the generations before us and that unfortunately the people in many countries don't have today. But I've noticed something else. I wonder if you've noticed it. With all this talk about we need to get more people involved, somebody seems to be getting left out of that calculation. There are a lot of messages being sent today that everybody should get involved except for Christians. It's kind of amazing, isn't it? I mean, wouldn't you think that Christians would be the very people that you would want to get involved? But I hear this message all the time. I hear commentators say, well, you know, these Christians that are trying to force their values on us, don't they know we have separation of church and state? I've even been confronted in visits around the country to local communities where people will say, I don't think you have a right to take your Christian values and get into the public square with those. Now, that would be bad enough, but I've noticed something else lately. Maybe this fits you and the church you're attending. I'm hearing pastors say that Christians shouldn't be involved in politics. I've had pastors sort of brag about the fact that at our church here, we don't get into politics. And pastors that say this will bring up all kinds of reasons. Oh, it detracts from the message of Jesus Christ, or it'll divide the church, or we'll lose our tax exemption. A lot of different excuses. So it made me start to think about, you know, is one of the problems here that Christians, including some pastors, that they don't know American history? I mean, we know in the general population, there's a really embarrassing lack of historical knowledge about our country. But I would have hoped that pastors and Christians would be more versed, but maybe we aren't. Or maybe it's our neighbors who haven't kept up on American history. So let me just review a couple of things with you in the time that we have. You can go back to the 1730s. We were British colonies then. There wasn't even an America in existence. And something amazing happened in those British colonies. There was a revival. It was called the Great Awakening. And in that Great Awakening in the 1730s, pastors all over America brought tens of thousands of people to Christ. But they did something else too. From the pulpit, they preached a message that all human beings had a right to be free, and that we had a right to govern ourselves, and that we shouldn't tolerate tyranny. Most historians have concluded that without that great Christian revival, that great awakening, the American colonies may have never revolted against King George and Great Britain. Just think, Christians involved in politics ended up contributing to the American Revolution and the liberty that we have today. Well, I could tell you about a lot of things that happened after the 1730s. We don't have all day, so I'll skip to the next century, the 1840s and 50s. A second revival took place in America. It was called by historians the Second Great Awakening. And in that awakening, pastors talked about the greatest moral evil that the country was facing at that time, which was slavery. Historians believe that that Second Great Awakening gave birth to the abolitionist movement. Pastors preaching from their pulpits reminded Americans that God did not create some men with saddles on their backs and other men with spurs to ride them. In other words, those Christian pastors said, America, we got to do something about this. We need to get our politicians to do something about it. And again, that gave birth to the abolitionists. And eventually, after an almost unimaginable civil war in which over 600,000 Americans died, the national sin of slavery was finally ended. Well, 1730s, the Great Awakening, the American Revolution, the 1840s, the Second Great Awakening, the abolitionist movement, ultimately the end of slavery. Let's get into the 1900s. You know, not long ago, we just celebrated the life of the Reverend Martin Luther King. Did you hear what I said? The Reverend Martin Luther King. You know, the Reverend Martin Luther King, in the last notable and famous speech that he gave, and if you've never watched it, I urge you to do so. It was a speech he delivered at the Lincoln Memorial. You'll hear in that speech, and certainly his audience heard, many, many biblical references. Because at the end of the day, Martin Luther King's appeal to America was an appeal based on godly principles, all key to the Christian gospel. Martin Luther King said that the reason that the civil rights movement needed to happen was because Black men and women ought to be included in the promises of our Declaration of Independence and our founding document. Now, I want to mention something to you that I'm almost certain you don't know, and it's not very apparent in the history books. But when the Reverend Martin Luther King did this, he was opposed. Now, of course, he was opposed by racists, but he was opposed by a lot of pastors. Think about that a second. You may think, oh, well, of course, those pastors in the South, they didn't like that message. Well, that's true, because they had bought into sort of the segregation, and many of them didn't want to upset the apple cart. They didn't want to offend those people in the congregation that believed in segregation. But this is kind of shocking. He was also opposed by many Black pastors because they thought he was going to make things worse, that he was causing trouble, that he was going to divide people, that bad things would end up happening. You know, Martin Luther King, when he was put in prison at one point, actually wrote a letter from a Birmingham jail, and the letter was written to the pastors of Birmingham, Alabama, asking them why they weren't joining him in this great struggle to influence our government so we could end segregation. And then we could go a little bit further into the 1980s and 1990s. Some of you might remember this personally. There was another religious movement in the United States. A new group of voters rose to the fore. They were called the Moral Majority. there were people like Jerry Falwell and Pat Robertson that began talking to other pastors and saying, look, things are going badly in America. We need to get the church involved. And, you know, all of that culminated in 1980 with the election of Ronald Reagan to the presidency. You see, the political experts look back at that election, and it's absolutely clear to them what happened. Millions of Southern evangelicals and Midwestern Catholics voted for Ronald Reagan. Previously, those voters very often voted for the Democrat Party, but they were beginning to have some questions, and they listened to Reagan, who talked about this needing to be one nation under God. And so they elected him by a pretty solid majority. And then Ronald Reagan, after he became president, and I had the great honor of working for him for 8 years, something I still look back at with great pleasure. Ronald Reagan did two incredibly important things, among other things that he did. He defeated Soviet communism, godless Soviet communism, the greatest threat that free people all over the world faced. The second thing that Ronald Reagan did that I think is really significant is that he believed the Supreme Court was out of control. And because he thought it was out of control, he started to try to appoint to the Supreme Court justices that would preserve our freedoms in a more reliable way. And today, because of what he did with those Supreme Court appointments and with other presidents that were supported by Christian voters and also appointed good Supreme Court justices, we have a Supreme Court today that has five, maybe in some cases six, reliable votes for religious liberty, for many of the other things that we care about. In fact, in just the last year, that majority on the Supreme Court overturned Roe versus Wade and ended the fiction that somewhere in our Constitution, there was a right to destroy the lives of innocent unborn children. It was never in the Constitution. The word abortion doesn't appear there. But the court said it was. And we lived with that lie for many, many years until the court ended it in 2022. What a great thing that happened, not just because of good presidents, but because of Christian voters that were involved and helped elect them. After his presidency, other presidential candidates that wanted to get the Christian vote began to emphasize the Supreme Court too. And the result is that today we have on the Supreme Court at least five, and sometimes six Supreme Court justices that are committed to protecting religious liberty, so that our pastors and priests and religious leaders can say what they want from the pulpit, so that all of us can have a right of conscience to bring our faith into the workplace, into the public square, wherever we want to go. We also, because of those Christian voters and the politicians that listened to them, we were, in just the last year, able to end the fiction that somewhere in the Supreme Court, there was a right to kill innocent unborn children. That Supreme Court, with justices appointed by presidents, elected by the great majority of Christians, overturned Roe versus Wade and ended abortion on demand. Were those Christians in the moral majority, were they wrong? Was Martin Luther King wrong? Were the Christians in the Great Revival in the 1730s and the Great Revival in the 1840s? All of these things, by the way, brought more people to Christ. But were they wrong to be involved in politics? No, as Christians, they had an obligation to be involved in politics. So that's what the James Dobson Family Institute is trying to do in our public policy work. And it's why we want you to tune in to this podcast. And we want you to go online and utilize the great resources we're putting up. And if you haven't read all of Dr. James Dobson's books, you need to read them. And if you have read them, you need to read them again, because he addresses this issue of Christian responsibility to be a good citizen, as well as a good father and a good parent and a good mother, in the many books that he has written over the years. So I hope you'll be back next week to listen to us again. You know, as I do, that America is facing incredible problems: the breakdown of the family, rising crime, rising hatred. All of these things require Christians to be involved. In fact, I can say with certainty that without Christians, America may not survive for another generation. So tune in next week and join this great team at the James Dobson Family Institute as we fight for faith, family, and freedom. God bless you.
Subscribe to Gary Bauer's Defending Faith, Family, and Freedom where you find your favorite podcasts. Just hit the subscribe button to ensure you receive every episode.